Russia's war against Ukraine, which former U.S. President Donald Trump had promised to end immediately upon taking office, continues unabated. Bombs are still falling on Ukrainian cities, people are dying, suffering persists, and lately there have been growing international efforts to achieve a ceasefire, especially through pressure and sanctions, particularly from European leaders. Donald Trump is also making efforts. In fact, on the very day this podcast is being recorded, he held a phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin. However, so far, all these initiatives remain inconclusive and offer little cause for optimism. This raises the question, what do the people in Ukraine actually think? What do those living in bombed-out cities make of the developments on the international stage? That's exactly what we'll be exploring in today's episode of In Crisis Mode.
But the people who experienced the occupation and this war, they will never be the same again.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Welcome to a new episode of In Crisis Mode. I'm Jan Jessen, chief political correspondent for NDRZ and a war and crisis reporter for the Funke Media Group. You can read my reports in the NDRZ, the WAZ, the Hamburger Abendblatt, the Berliner Morgenpost, and of course on all the online portals of the Funke Media Group. Today, I'm taking you to Kherson, a city in southern Ukraine that, perhaps more than any other, has become symbolic of this war. I've been to Kherson several times, and you can find those earlier episodes linked in the show notes. Kherson gained symbolic significance because it was occupied early in the war by Russian forces. Located at the mouth of the Dnipro River, it was the only regional capital to fall into Russian hands after the invasion began. The city surrendered with little or no resistance and remained under occupation for 8 months. During this time, Russian forces established a highly repressive regime. Some call it a reign of terror. People disappeared, were tortured, and killed, both men and women. In the fall of 2022, the city was liberated. But ever since then, it has been under constant attack. From the opposite riverbank, still controlled by Russian troops, drones, rockets, and artillery strikes bombard the city almost daily. Civilian casualties are, sadly, a regular occurrence. In this episode, you'll hear directly from people living in Kherson, how they live with fear, why they choose to remain despite the dangers, and what they think about the latest peace initiatives. Let me start by introducing Natalia. She's in her late 30s and lives in Kherson. Each day she faces the full force of this war. She works as a firefighter, often risking her life to save others. I met her in one of the relatively safer parts of the city, the Shumensky district. There, people can still walk outside, unlike in the city center, where crowds once celebrated liberation on Freedom Square in autumn 2022. Today, it's almost impossible to walk there due to constant drone activity. Some of these drones are fiber optic and cable controlled, making them immune to jamming, a frightening detail. But even in the relatively calmer Shumensky district, just last week there was heavy shelling. Natalia shared her views on Russian demands, specifically that any peace agreement must include uncontested access to Kherson and other territories that haven't been occupied. The Russians want Ukraine to withdraw and effectively give up these regions, also parts of Luhansk and Donetsk. It's a steep demand.
I really hope that Kherson doesn't end up with Russia and that the Kherson region remains part of Ukraine. And Zaporizhia and Kharkiv, we will take them all back completely. Too many human lives have been lost to just give everything up like that.
Not far from where I met Natalia, I spoke with Denis, who was sitting on a bench beneath the trees. In Kherson, residents stay under trees to avoid being spotted by drones, which may carry grenades or act as kamikaze devices. Remaining unseen is often a matter of life and death. You notice this everywhere. Cars are parked under trees. Buses are avoided. Anything visible is a potential target. There have even been deadly attacks on public transport. Denis and his friend Taras, both 20 years old, are studying to become sailors. Denis spoke about how special it feels to visit his grandparents in Mykolaiv, just 60 kilometers away. He described how dire life in Kherson has become. When I asked Denis about peace negotiations, such as the recent talks in Istanbul, he was skeptical. These were low-level diplomatic talks with no tangible results. The Russians continue to demand full control of all territories they claim to annex in 2022.
Well, in Kherson, there is constant artillery shelling. Drones are flying nonstop every day. At the moment, you can only move around more or less freely in Tauriski and Shymansky, where they are currently located. The rest, like the city center, I've even been there myself. It's impossible. There are literally drones on every corner. Driving is almost impossible because of the constant attacks. So, yes, it is very dangerous.
I asked him if Kherson could be considered the price for peace. Denis was conflicted. He wondered if Kherson could still be called a city, given all the destruction. Ultimately, he said it was up to the politicians. Taras had a different view. He pointed out that many of the soldiers currently fighting are from regions like Kherson, Donetsk, or Luhansk, and they should be asked how they feel about surrendering their homes, a powerful and thought-provoking comment.
I follow the news a little bit, but honestly, I found it pointless. They came, talked about something, but didn't really agree on anything, as always, and left again.
So, that's an interesting viewpoint. And maybe it's worth asking the soldiers, those who risk their lives, what they think of such plans. Just a few meters from the bench where Taras and Denis sat, there is a building that used to be both a cinema and a nightclub, a place where people celebrated, danced, laughed, and watched movies. After the liberation in autumn 2022, it briefly served as a humanitarian hub where food was distributed to Kherson's residents. Then, a few weeks later, the Russians bombed it, and now it's just a ruin. Shattered glass, twisted steel, broken concrete scattered around. Before that, I met Tatiana, who was out with her friend. Both have pit bulls. You might even hear one in the background. That's Katya's pit bull, which was quite intimidating and very aggressive. Anyway, I spoke with Tatiana about the situation. She said she used to go to that cinema and watched films there. She regretted that it's now destroyed. She's a primary school teacher and teaches many of her students online. Some are abroad, but some still remain in Kherson. She's trying to maintain some normalcy and told me how she manages.
I'm quite busy because I'm constantly online and working with children who are abroad. That's why I rarely go outside.
She goes outside rarely, of course, because it's just too dangerous. She said they used to take long walks with the dogs, sometimes an hour and a half or more. That's no longer possible. Now she only goes out briefly to stretch her legs and let the dogs outside, because it's far too risky to be outside for longer periods. I also asked her how she feels about the negotiations and the Russian demand for the uncontested handover of Zaporizhzhia and the still unoccupied parts of Luhansk and Donetsk. She said those demands are completely unacceptable to her.
My mother lives on the left bank and stayed there alone. She buried my father by herself. Still, we want to return, reunite, see each other again in Ukraine.
She also shared some other thoughts with me. By the left bank, Tatiana means the area on the other side of the river that is occupied by the Russians, from where they keep shooting into the city. Sometimes I get the impression it's simply revenge for losing Krasnodar in autumn 2022. Otherwise, it's hard to explain. These are, in my opinion, pure terror attacks because they constantly target civilian infrastructure in Kherson. As I said, now drones specifically hunt cars, civilian vehicles, buses and such, which has no military purpose. So, it really looks like revenge, trying to demoralize the people in Kherson, who, as I mentioned, celebrated and cheered on Freedom Square in the city center in autumn 2022. Now, that place is a no-go zone because it's just too dangerous. And yes, Tatiana says her mother lives in this occupied area alone and has buried her father. This is one of the heartbreaking stories you hear repeatedly. Families torn apart. When the Russians came, it happened so fast that some had no time to flee, and even today families remain separated. Tatiana says clearly, "I want to be with my mother. I want to return. I want to be united again." And that must be Ukraine. So a very clear statement. She does not want Ukrainian territory ceded to the Russians. Olga, who I also met in that area, thinks similarly. She had a small Pekingese dog with her on a walk. She said the dog is not scared at all. I asked if he gets nervous from all the explosions. No, he's used to it. He's a frontline dog, which was funny because he was so small. Olga, like almost everyone I talked to there, except maybe Dennis, was very clear about what she thinks and how she sees the future.
I don't believe that our government will simply give up Kherson, that they would hand over the city to Russia. That's not going to happen. I just can't imagine it. These demands from the Russians, they can go where their warship already ended up. We suffered under the occupation for 8 months and still resisted. That must not have been in vain. I refuse to believe that our government would now just sign a document that gives up Kherson.
The warship she mentioned is the Moskva. You might remember that in April 2022, this Russian flagship of the Black Sea Fleet was sunk. It also became a symbol of resistance and defiance because back then, in March and April 2022, no one thought Ukraine would survive this war for long. But it did. And the sinking of that ship became a symbol of that resistance. Many people still remember that, and so does Olga, who said, "They should all go into the water, into the sea. They should be sunk." After we left Kherson, we spent a few hours there, heard other stories, but then we headed east. As I said, Kherson is in southern Ukraine, and we continued east to Kramatorsk, where I am now. Please excuse the sound quality of this recording. I'm doing this from an apartment because, as journalists, we can no longer stay in hotels. Most are destroyed, and hotels are often targeted because military personnel are stationed there near the front. That's why hotels are deliberately attacked. So lately we try to find apartments. That's why I'm here now, hoping the sound is okay. While we were driving here, there was that conversation between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. As mentioned, Trump believes he can end this war relatively quickly. He keeps demanding that it should finally be over. And yes, somehow this conversation, like so many others lately, seems to have happened without any real outcome. So, here in the background, we're in Ukraine, specifically in Kramatorsk, shortly after Putin and Trump spoke on the phone. By the time the call ended, it had already gotten dark here. And as you can hear, there's another air raid siren. So you can understand why people in Kramatorsk don't really believe that peace will come anytime soon. I also talked to my fixer. Fixers are the people who help us on the ground, open doors, prepare trips with us, local colleagues. And my friend and fixer, Artem Lysak. I asked him what he thinks of these peace talks or the phone call between Putin and Trump today. To be honest, I don't really believe in the diplomatic efforts that are happening right now, not just from Trump and the Americans, but especially from the Europeans. There was, for example, a joint demand from the heads of state and government of France, Poland, Germany and the UK for a 30-day ceasefire, which was coordinated with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Putin didn't respond to that, just like he now refuses to agree to a ceasefire after the conversation with Trump.
There is no any results of the call. They talk, and the result is that Ukraine and Russia need negotiations. Okay, everybody knew it, that they need negotiations, so I can't see any results. But what we really saw again, that Donald Trump prioritizing short-term deals over stability. He's talking about earning money. US will earn money. Russia will trade with US. It's so cool. Sometimes I've got a feeling that he don't understand the problem of this war. This particular conversation was pointless. I don't feel that it will bring any results.
Personally, I feel peace won't come for now. Things can change fast, but my gut says this war will sadly continue, and people in Kherson will keep suffering. People in other frontline cities like Sumy or Kharkiv in the north and northeast, constantly shelled, will also continue to suffer. People will keep dying. Soldiers will die in a pointless war that serves only the ego of one man in the Kremlin. It's total madness, but that's how it is. I'm not sure how this will end. On the other hand, I understand Ukraine. Everyone wants peace, but not at the price of a dictated peace that means giving up their own land just because a brutal dictator in Russia is attacking them. Rewarding Putin for this war would send the wrong signal to all dictators worldwide. So, I hope Europeans continue to stand firm, support Ukraine, pressure Putin, and maybe even get Trump to finally wake up and see that Putin is not the great guy he thinks he is, but a war criminal and aggressor responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands. Well, that was a very spontaneous episode, given the current global developments. I hope you still found it useful. This episode was produced by Alexander Baumeister, a journalist from the Funke Media Group radio station. If you like our podcast, please recommend it. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. Follow us and share with friends interested in this kind of content. If you have questions, suggestions, or criticism, write us. That's it for today. Thanks, and I'll keep you updated. I'll certainly report more from Ukraine. Take care. See you soon. Ciao, ciao.
Ein Podcast von Funke.